And the reason why I'm so excited about him is because he's one of the very core, important people that helped Howard to have freedom. So without further ado, I want you guys to do me a favor, stand up and help me welcome to the stage, Al Levy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to stop for a second. Thank you all. Thank you for standing. I know it wasn't just because you're tired of sitting, right? Because otherwise I would be insulted. I did stop and work with Howard many years ago. Our good friend, mutual friend, Ellen Rohr. Anybody ever heard that name? Yes. And all of the good things that have happened and she shares is because of me. She's not in the room, is she? No. Okay. Yes. We have had a phenomenal relationship. We met in 94. She was 18, in case anybody's doing math. She's a great person. We've been great influences on each other. I'm coming here today to share this with you. I'm going to step down. Here's the thing. I was blessed with height, not hair. And hopefully you can all see me. Is that true? See me back there? Some of you are thinking, I'm glad Al's at the stage, because he won't come over here and bother me so I can just check my phone, nod off, send a note to my wife, who I love. You're wrong. You're all wrong. I do get around, so try not to nap. Okay, so here's the important thing. In a show of hands in this room, how many of you are able to say truthfully, I don't spend my whole day micromanaging my staff? By a show of hands. Excellent. Excellent for you. All right, you can all leave. The reality is this is how I spend my life. We were 70 people company, and you know, the thing that you need to know is it was hard. Now, I show this picture because Ellen found it somewhere. And the reason I like to show this photo is because it's kind of like looking in a mirror. Now, the reason I show this photo is because I actually worked as a technician in my life. I was the third generation in a family business that did plumbing, heating, air conditioning on Long Island. Today we do electrical. And I'm pleased to say the fourth generation, my nephew, is in business with my middle brother. There were three brothers. Yep, still there. Still there knocking it out. And they're doing great. And without systems, you can't do that. Now, some of you may not be in the plumbing, heating, cooling, electrical trade and going, oh, I got to sit here and listen to this guy go on about this stuff. What has that got to do with me? Well, my dad was a serial entrepreneur. And by the time we were this big, we were allowed to sit in business meetings. Not allowed to talk. Yes. Shut up. Take notes. And you can ask all the questions you want later on. So we had dairy stores. We had real estate, we had liquor stores, we were in the computer software business and radiant heat manufacturer. Here's what my dad used to like to say when people would go on about, oh, my business is way different than yours. He said about that much. How many of you wake up at your own business and go, there must be 7 million things I've got to do to get this thing right? Thank you for nodding your head, I appreciate it. Because it's true, that's how I used to feel. And I thought maybe there's just that one thing, you know, the one thing that's just going to fix it all, right? That one silver, thank you, you're laughing because you know what I'm saying, right? It's the one thing that's going to make it all work. If I tell them that's not true, are they going to walk out on me? Okay, you guys are going to stay. No, it's not true. There are 7 things. Planning, operations, staffing, sales coaching, marketing, and financial. 7 things you have to master. And my conversation today is about one of them, which is operating power. Standard operating procedures. I've taught this to thousands of contractors like you, but I've also worked with other people. My first job ever was with an electrical company. The guy had to beg me to go work for him. I said, I never did electrical. He says, well, I've read all your stuff. I need you to write 30 pages for me. That's what we did. Wrote 30 pages. And they just gone off to a giant-sized company. I actually worked with a photographer. I'm not kidding. Photographer calls me up and says, I need you. I said, well, I've taken pictures, but I'm not a photographer. She goes, listen, my photographers are like your technicians. My people in the office who dispatch them are like dispatchers. It's exactly the same. So our businesses are more alike. But we have to do certain things that make that happen. And so that's really what I'm here to teach. So the question here is, why are you here? Make friends, and I've already been told you're very friendly by Alan. So introduce yourself very quickly to each other at the table. Act like you're friends. And one of you very quickly has to become the team captain. Come on, we got to move. Pick a team captain. Pick a team captain. There'll be a test that you know everybody's name at your table. All right. First order of business. May I have the team captain? Have you all selected your team captain? Please stand, all team captains. A big round of applause. Okay, now point to the person right or left of you, because they're the new team captain. Up. All right, the new team captain, please stand. Congratulations for volunteering. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, have a seat. That was tricky. And you know, I'm from New York originally. I live in Arizona. And I really feel bad about it. Kind of. So why did I do that? Why did I do that? You know, what happened is, this is what I used to do to my employees every day. I sabotaged them. I handicapped them. Things changed. They woke up this morning. They thought they were going to this job to do this thing. Does that sound familiar? And when it got to work, what happened? No. So who has to demonstrate that we can change, and better yet, in this particular seminar, set some rules to play by, right? It's up to us as the leaders to set some rules that we can agree to play by. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. All right. So take 2 minutes, get a feedback from your table, and come up with your top five, number one, frustrations. You with me? Top five, number one, frustrations. Talk. Make believe you're friends again. Is it working back there? There we go. Okay. So what I'm looking for is your biggest problem or challenge. And what's your biggest obstacle, growth, and profit? Hang on a second, guys. Take a quick look at the board here. What is your biggest problem or challenge? What's your biggest obstacle to grow and be profitable? That's what I'm looking for, the top five frustrations. Yep. Everybody got it? All right. We got a timekeeper back there. 2 minutes. 2 minutes. This is a nice crowd because usually we get into fist fights by now. So yeah, we could just make a list of whatever their top five is. Okay. We're just going to pick what we agree is the top five. How many of you, by a show of hands, walked in here and thought, well, I don't have to do any work, I just have to listen to this guy? I know. Boy, you guys got so misstirred here. It's awful. And again, I feel really bad about that. It doesn't look like I'm telling the truth. All right, we got 1 minute. Christian, 1 minute. 1 minute. All right. For some of you, you'll relate to this. Pens down. Okay. Team captains, on your feet. Who is just dying to tell us their number one frustration challenge? Because in the back of the room, oh, I got a hand quick. That was good. Wait a second. Do we need a mic? Or can I just share in here? See how important you are?
I know.
And because we could just go, but no.
Nope, they have to do it.
They got to wait for you. All right. Give us the number one, either
number
a big
one,
trauma challenge or both dropticals.
Finding the right or good people.
Oh, man, I wish I had thought of that. That is excellent, though. I'm sorry. It's really good. That one's got to go on the list. You got it back there?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going to... Sorry. You ready? Oh, you got the mic? We're going to go to the room next. All right. You go, Mike.
We've got leadership.
That's the thing that's getting in the way of this?
Yes. Yes.
No leadership?
Yes.
No direction?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we've got a couple more, but we
said one. Your best one is what I asked for.
Yes, sir.
Hang on a second. We're going to make them go on the other. Can we get the mic to the other side? We'll come on back. Because otherwise they're going to be left out. You got a mic on the other side? Nice and loud.
Okay, so ours was also keeping people accountable.
Accountable. So you want me to actually do what you want?
I would love that.
That should be written down, I think. Good one. All right, let's swing back over this way. Go ahead.
Not knowing the right metrics.
They don't know how they're being judged. Is that a fair way to say it?
How to measure.
Yeah, how to measure it, the right metrics. I like that one. We got that one?
Yeah.
So we got a top five. How many we got? 40?
Three.
Okay. Nice and loud.
Tracking growth.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Tracking growth and profit.
You mean, different than the metrics? That are there. This is the metrics for the company?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Metrics for the company. Got it. All right. Sorry, go ahead.
We have systems.
Systems. A lack thereof?
Yes.
I like that one. Okay. We got room for one more?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Toxic negative employees.
Wow.
I'm crushed. Attitude, negative. I'm going to take this as a bonus. Don't get offended, but I got five, but I want to hear it. Go ahead.
Bonus.
Real quick.
Communication.
There's a lack of communication.
Poor communication.
You can put that as six, but we're going to roll. All right, guys. I apologize. You got something you want? He's got
people,
a mic.
People.
Yeah, same kind of thing. Larry, do you have something? No. Same thing, people.
Ours was challenging clients or customers.
Challenging clients or customers. Don't they know we're coming to help them? What's wrong with those people? Is that legit? I mean, really, are those legit?
Yes.
Absolutely. And that is everything that kept me awake during the day and the night and everything else. And I feel your pain. I'm not kidding. I do feel your pain because I've been there. And I continue to work with people and I feel their pain, and it's a knife that keeps jabbing because I remember what it's like. I will tell you that when you point the finger, four is still back at you, my friends. And that is the hardest medicine I had to take. Because I was really good at blaming other people. It was a shame that somebody actually pulled my blinders off one day and said, you can't do that. Because until you own it, you can't take charge. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yep. So that's part of the thing here. So the reason I asked for that topic, I'm going to talk about how this stuff affects you. So what are you going to learn about today as it relates to standard operating procedures, and what did that have to do with what you just went through? Boy, I hope this works. I'm kidding. The do's and don'ts, because there are do's and don'ts to operating manuals and procedures. Yep. How operating manuals can change your company for the better. And why manuals have to track back and get hung on your org chart. Without the org chart, kind of what you guys were talking about, right? Everybody jumping in and out. I live that scenario with two older brothers and my dad. Yeah. One simple secret to get buy-in from your staff. The three critical things you must do to roll out the manuals the right way. So let's get to some do's and don'ts. Back in, I have been trying to write the operating manuals for years and years and years. Anybody in this room try to write their operating manuals? I hear you. And I did. It was about this big when paper was around. It made me feel really good, but I was a New York City union shop. A New York City union shop. You hearing me? And they were ecstatic about that idea. Here you go. It's a problem. So finally I had to hire somebody to work with me. Spent $150,000 back in today's money in 1996 to hire in a writer. Our best friend Ellen Rohr and I, Dan Hollihan, who's a professional writer. Held all these meetings, did all these things together. Because he looked at me one day and he said, I know you. And he did. He said, you want to go in your room, sit at the computer, and emerge with the tablets that everybody has to obey. I'm the only one who feels that way, right? Thankfully, Dan stopped me from hurting myself and everyone else. We got our money back in 2 years. Here's what's the hard thing to know is if you even create your manuals, I didn't know what I didn't know. How many of you in business have ever had that experience? It was after we got the manuals I had to realize that there were a lot more. It was a process that had to be done. Because it's way more, originally it was words on a page, and now it's on a digital device. It really hasn't changed. Because ultimately what we're going for is buy-in. You don't want to take a rubber ball and throw it against the wall and watch it come back as fast as you threw it. Because that's what you'll do when you put manuals out there without doing the other pieces. That's going to hurt my arm on the flight back home. I don't know why I did that. They're way better than today. But here was the catalyst for me. You know, it's bad enough that my color photos are all turning brown, you know, that sepia thing. But when you find a picture, because I had to go look for one, it's black and white with my brothers and my dad. That's us standing in front of our fuel oil truck. For those who have not known about fuel oil heating, that's in the Northeast. Think propane. Same idea. And so that's us. I had joined an organization where I met Ellen. I told you about that. And I had my blinders ripped off. And as I promise you, once you have your blinders ripped off, they never fit back the same. No matter how hard you try, they'll never go back on the same way they did. I was making a ton of money As a contractor, that's pretty sweet. Right? The problem was, as a young man, I knew I was going to be dead pretty soon. The stress was killing me. I didn't sleep at night. I was 256 pounds, and in case you're interested, I'm 215 today. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's not an easy thing. But I was eating my stress and on a path of destruction. And unfortunately, that drives me today to help others. Because we don't have to do that to ourselves. My tagline when I went into business 18 years ago was less stress, more success. Yeah. Less stress, more success. Because that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. And so I walked into my office. Ellen came to our, we finally moved out of this terrible place that our office was in. We were in a neighborhood that urban renewal had destroyed. We used to refer to ourselves as Little House on the Prairie, if you're old enough to know what that means. We had to drive almost 2 miles to get to a diner. That's how bad it was. They had broken into every part of our building. There were no windows left in our building. There was no skylight left. We made our gates breakaway because they were stripping cars in the yard. That will help with their morale of the employees, don't you think? This was what was going on. And we finally moved to a nice place. We're in a small little office because my dad said to myself and my brothers, we don't make any money with you sitting in this office, so out you go. And that's what we learned from there. So Ellen walked in and saw that. So I walked in the office one day and I said to them, I am sick of feeling like a hostage to all of my employees. And here's what I bet. You feel the same way too. And to their credit, they said, we do. And then they looked at me and said, so what are you going to do about it? Well, they knew I was an implementer. And at that point, I really didn't know. But sometimes things come into your life. Am I right? Ellen and Dan, my two mentors and gurus and best friends, said to me, you got to stop what you're doing. And you have to read the book that he talked about, E-Myth. And that changed my life. It told me what I needed to do, and it told me why. It gave me zero help in the how. But those two, the what and why, were so important, I figured out the how. So we ran all these meetings, we did all these things, and that's what changed our business. Here's what manuals can do for you, all of you. Do make it so they can do their job. If you are like, by the way, put a hand up if you're a perfectionist and don't lie, because we know who you are. Is it ever good enough? Nope. Do you know how to clone yourself? Then get over it. What if they can't do their job? Oh. It's your fault! Because you never showed them, you never defined what the job is, you never trained them. It's your fault. Employees' level of competence or incompetence is what you must address so that they can do their job. Now, this was hard. Because at one time our shop was like this. Anybody know what a culture of this is? And I walk into companies and I can feel it instantly. We learned to get to like this, but it took a while. It took a while. So one of the hardest things is addressing the level of incompetence or incompetence, what you must do to address their job. In a shop of 25 technicians, I was the second best tech. Anybody want to guess who the first best tech was and still is to this day? Well, my dad passed, but thank you. My brother Richie. That's the one who's still there with my nephew. He was nicknamed the man who could fix anything, and he can. So I was number two, and here's what I would do at jobs. I would talk people out of doing the work because I wasn't really sure how to do it myself. And I'm the boss's kid. What do you think your employees are doing? Because they're deathly afraid to show you what they don't know. How many of them oversold themselves to you? Don't put your hands up because we already know. So what we had to do, which was very hard for New York guys, is we had to say this. Do you mind standing?
Sure.
Thank you. Whatever you don't know, from now on is my responsibility. I'm going to train you and show you, and you're going to demonstrate it. But after you demonstrate it and you don't do it in the field, well, then we have a problem. Fair enough? And so we took away this thing for them to hide and made it, you could just feel the exhale. Do get and share the knowledge. Do get and share the knowledge. Okay. So who are you beholding to? Who are you beholding to at your own company? This is the question. So I decided to spend all this money. We're going to have these manuals. We're going to talk about everything that goes on in our business, every detail that goes on in our business. You hear me? 80% though, not 100. Because we realized if we could handle the 80, the 20 doesn't throw you for a loop. So make a note of that. Your goal in all of this is the 80. You can deal with the 20. But the question is, who are you beholding to? Well, in my particular case, I had spent a year going to every box in my company, sitting there with people and creating just the outline. Think of it as the skeleton. Didn't write the process procedure, just needed to know the tasks for each of these boxes. That is until I got to my operations manager, Mark. And pretty soon, this is how the conversation went. Well, how do you do this at the terminal? He goes, well, it depends. And then he would say something else about, well, you really can't define that. And it was going on and on and on. And finally, I put my pen down, and I looked at Mark, and I go, here's how I see it, Mark. You don't want to give me the information because you think that's what makes you indispensable, and you are wrong. Your ability to train and empower others is what makes you valuable. So if you're going to hold me hostage, if you make a mistake and cross the street and don't see the bus, you're in trouble, and so am I, and I'm not good with that. And to Mark's credit, he gave it up. He gave it up. And in coaching others, the same thing. People think they're valuable by what they know, and that is not the truth. They are valuable for what they do and how they empower others. That's what you have to build your company on. Sorry for laughing, but there are moments that come. Trust me, none of this was funny when it was happening. None of it was funny when it was happening. We were primarily in the heating business originally. So when do customers call in the heating business? When it's cold. So there was a CSR, customer service rep, named Natalie. Not my wife, Natalie. So if you read any of my stories, I'm not talking about my wife. We were smart enough not to work together. Thank you. So there was a CSR, Natalie, who happened to be out most of the time when it was cold, which was inconvenient, to say the least. And if she liked you, your call rose all the way to the top. And if she didn't like you, your call fell all the way to the bottom. And I put up with this misery for a long time. And finally I had the manuals and I said, enough. I did a phone interview. Her name was Linda. She sounded good over the phone. I brought her in. I had a CSR manual. We spent a week going through the manual together, doing phone role plays, and here's what I have to tell you. Linda was better in 1 week than she had ever been, Natalie, in 20 years at work. I was enlightened at that point, and I was no longer feeling that hostage. That's what you can do as well. But here's the trap. Do look in the mirror. So you've already heard the name Dan Holohan, correct? Dan Holohan was this heating hero. And I was lucky enough to have him in my truck. I don't know if you know how special that is. So he's in my truck, and I don't want to say it was a long time ago, but we were riding from a call, and my beeper was going off. And my phone, that's the size, you know, I had a handle on it, was ringing. And our two-way radio was calling me. And Dan in the passenger seat looks over at me and says the following thing. You think that's normal, don't you? And here are the two thoughts that went through my head that I bet you guys can relate to. The first thing I thought is, I hate every one of them for doing this to me. And the second thing I thought was, I'm pretty special. I'm indispensable. Look at me. This place would fall apart without me. Here's the identities that get in the way. You are the guru. You know everything. This is how it went. Because in New York, it was a little more nasty. Oh, you don't know that, Robert? I do. Would you like to know? Because I'll be happy to share with you. Because I know it all. So my unwillingness to unload the guru was getting in my way. Does that make sense? I liked to be like the cavalry and ride into the rescue. There was a problem, a disaster. No problem. Al's coming to fix it. And the other one is the fireman. As young boys, we like to be firemen, don't we? Yes? I liked riding in and put the fire out. Here's the most sinister part of this. If there was no fires, I was helping to set them. Unconsciously setting the fires by sabotaging them, by not giving them the information, by not sharing them. We did residential, commercial, industrial. And when it came to the commercial industrial, which was very sophisticated equipment, there were two people that went to school for all this high-level stuff. You've heard their names before, and one of them standing in front of you, so I'll make it easy. The other guy was Richie. So we had crews from 7 to 4, 8 to 5, 10 to 7, 2 to 11 p.m., and 5 p.m. to 2 a.m. I'm not talking about on-call. Those were crews and shifts. You hear me? They would get to a call, and they couldn't do what they needed to do on those big jobs. So who do they have to call? Me or Richie? Hence the phone by my bed waking me up every night. Sound right? And who did I hate for that? Them. Hate them. Until one day, Richie and I just said, you know what, if we told them to check the fuel, the spark, and the air before they call, and put actually a procedure together and paper and go through with them, maybe they wouldn't do that much. We wrote a total of 5 pages, and 50% of our wake-up calls went away. You hear what I'm saying? It was us that were causing the problem. Do know what's policies versus procedures. A policy is what to do. Policy is what to do. And a procedure is how to do it. So, an example would be, a policy is you must have clean hands. So what you think is clean hands, you think that person thinks the same thing as what you think is clean hands, you think that person thinks what the same thing as clean hands. No, right? Because I may say you need to wash each finger for 30 seconds with hand soap and a scrubber, right? But how would you know that? You wouldn't know until I write it out, correct? Yep. So that's why you have to be able to do both things. By a show of hands, who loves nonstop, never-ending training? Did you span the room? Because it was only me. You guys are pretty busy. You got extra time to train people? I don't think so. Am I right? So because you don't train, and what happens? That should be caught. He said they train themselves. That's great. That's really great. Because that is the truth. If I could deliver to you tomorrow, does anybody do plumbing in this room? Heating, cooling? Okay. Stand up for 1 second. You got a mic? Just because they want a recording. So if you're really, really busy, David, and I could give you just 5 great techs, all really well trained. They've gone to school, they got a great pedigree, they know how to talk to customers, love them. What are the chances that they could go an hour's drive from your place and all do a toilet reset exactly the same way that you want at your company?
They probably wouldn't.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. See? That only took a little. Yes. And why not, David? Because? Have we ever defined it in writing?
No, we haven't.
Okay.
No.
All right. Thank you for your speaking part. Good job. A round of applause. Yeah. Now make that 25 employees of what I had. They're going to do it the way they were trained, wherever they were trained. And what's the chances it's your way? Zero. Zero. And that's what I had to learn. That's what I had to learn. So if you don't do training, what are you really doing to your customers? We have a nice way to say it. O-T-J-T. O-T-J-T. That's what you do. Say it. On-the-job training, congratulations, they got it. So what you're really doing is coming to my house to learn your job. That's really what you're doing. And by the way, I did it forever. So I'm not pointing fingers here, but that's what we do. What's the chances that they're going to learn what they need to learn? The answer is very little. This has to become really what you do. So it can't be viewed as an interruption to your job. Let that sink in on you, because that's the problem. It is your job. So how do you train them? You train them with operating manuals. Now, I didn't wake up one day and I went to school, which is kind of funny, because when I came home for spring break, my spring break was a lot different than my kids. My spring break is my dad gave me a different truck to drive. When I got home, you know, he basically said to me that, here's your toolbox, and I went out and I learned how to train. And I became, like I said, the second best tech. And one day I walked into my dad's office, I probably was about 35, and I said, Dad, you know, being a tech's fine. Is that all there is? And my dad was not like me. He was about 5'7". He talked about this loud. Ellen met him. And it was very funny about when he would talk, because he was one of the best salespeople. People would lean in while he would talk. So you can see that I'm not quite the same, but the idea is that he said to me this in a very nice way. You are never getting out of that truck until you figure out how to get other people in it. And that is all he said to me. All he said to me. And that's where the manuals came in. That's where the training center came in. That's where the training curriculum came in. That's where I went to Dale Carnegie to learn how to train in more classes than you can imagine. Make sense? Because at that point, I understood about it being my job. It was not something that I could just tack on as something nice. It was what I had to learn how to do. And when I learn how to do anything, I'm going to learn how to do it good. Do not sabotage your job, your team. Don't sabotage your team. Here's the thing. Any systems beat no systems. Any systems beat no systems. The question is, why would you work with broken systems? So the trick is to get really good systems in place and see how far they can go. You may start with good employees, but by dropping them into poor and no systems, you're in fact turning your good employees into substandard. That again falls to you. Don't keep struggling with these following things. By a show of hands, how many of you find yourself answering the same question day in and day over again to all? I'm the only one in this room? Oh, come on. Don't make me go out there and get you. Don't we do that all the time? I'm going to tell you something. People who want to know where their day disappears, I'm going to help you out. It disappears with all of your employees saying to you, got a minute? Got a minute? And why do they need a got a minute? Because there isn't any structure. Yeah, exactly, Cheryl. There is no structure. There is no things that they need to know. You know, yesterday when you were talking about the importance of wearing the shoe covers on my feet so I keep the house clean, I know that was really important, and I was really trying to pay attention to that, Mark. Where do I go to get my shoe covers? It says warehouse.
Where?
The warehouse. Next day, I know shoe covers are really important in this place. And when you told me yesterday where I was going, I was distracted because I had a fight with my wife. So I wasn't listening really care. Where do I go?
Warehouse.
Warehouse. Got it. Got it. I promise this will be the last time I'm going to ask. You know, I know you said something about shoe covers being really important, and I want to make sure I comply. But my dog bit me on the way to work, and I was totally distracted. Where do I get my shoe covers?
The warehouse.
Oh, the warehouse. And this is what I was living with constantly. Now magnify that by 25 techs and all the people in the office. And that is what really makes a world of difference, answering the same questions, same old questions over and over. The other thing is, by a show of hands, who knows what callbacks are? So for you, it's repeat or going back or whatever else it is. Same term. Everybody uses different terms. We were creating so many callbacks, we could never go to new work and make more new money. Make sense to you? And in the old days, if you didn't like what I did, you told 100 of your friends, right? What can I do today? I can tell the whole world, all 7 billion of you, about how miserable you made my life. I'd say the stakes have gone up. They have. And doing callbacks is what's robbing. So what I want you to think of callbacks, and because who's a plumber in this room? Put your hand up, proud plumbers. Okay. It's a bathtub with the drain wide open. You're never going to shut that drain off. Your goal is to slow it down. Make sense? That's what you're looking for in callbacks. And that goes to whoever you are and whatever business you do. Handling unnecessary customer complaints. I heard something about customers when we were doing top five. They're unnecessary because we didn't do our job. We were not prepared before we got to the house. Does that make sense?
So it's not the same thing as handling customer complaints. It's seriously handling stuff that shouldn't have happened in the first place.
Yes. What she's saying is it's not stuff that should never have happened in the first place. Is that a good paraphrase? Excellent. Good point. Because stuff will happen. Dealing with parking lot meetings. I would have a meeting with my guys. I would have a discussion. I would ask for their input. And everybody was good. Until they walked right outside my window. They didn't even have the decency to walk away from my window. No, they had a meeting right outside my window to have their own meeting. What I call parking lot meetings. And this is what your staff does. And here's the other thing, because I heard it come up. struggling to find good people, let alone great people. Yes?
No.
No. Well, good for you.
I'm not saying, oh, how great am I? I'm just saying that I feel like it's really important not to own that statement.
Okay. It's negative.
Yeah.
All of you, stop it. Because she's right. They are all good people that you are sabotaging by not having the systems and the training. Is that fair? Okay, good. My brothers and I were not born enlightened, but we finally brightened up a little bit. So Marty was the inside guy, thankfully, because Richie and I really didn't want any part of it. And Richie wanted to be in the field all day, and I was the kind of go-between. You follow the great corporate structure that we had? And so Marty hated the idea of training, and he would get fed up with an employee in the office, accounts receivable, accounts payable, answering the phone and dispatch. And here's the brilliance that he had. He wanted to get rid of you, so he would have you train your replacement. Yeah. I'm not the only one, am I? Training their own replacement. If you have only one person in a position who has the ability to train their own replacement, you're basically stuck with them, whether they're good or bad. And even if they're great, you're still at risk, aren't you, if they're the only person? Because what did I say about the bus? Heaven forbid that the bus hits them, but it, not only for them, for you. So without manuals, without training, how can you create depth at each position? You hearing what I'm saying? So it's not just about empowering the people that necessarily fill that box. It's about creating depth. Don't rely on communicating this way. Now, I'm not saying don't talk to your people. That's not what I said. You'll back me up, right? What I'm saying is, how can you judge me on anything you told me in the hallway 6 months ago? But we don't have time to write it down, do we? Do we? No. You don't have time to write it down, so you're just going to talk to me. Hey, Al, when you go to the job, put the carpet down, cover the floor, make sure you drain the water down the house, whatever it is, the things I got to do. And when I don't do that, you're going to come back and say, you remember we were in the hallway 6 months ago and you said to me, I never heard that. And so you know how insane this conversation is? Does that make sense? We talk to our people, but we don't talk and try to run our company. That's what I'm trying to say here. And issuing memos. Again, I promise you this was much funnier later on in life, not at the time. So in a field of 25 techs, there were two only, Richie and I, and we were always the last guys standing. So at 2 a.m., we'd be in our office, and here's the way the conversation went. I had typing skills, and Richie did not. And Richie would tell me about a tech who didn't do something that he wanted. You hearing me? Sound familiar? Yes? Sound familiar? Say yes. So I would type up the memo and hand it to him, and he would look at it. Look at me, Lewis. He would look at it and go, okay, but can you make it harder? Tougher? Tougher? So now I would do it in all caps, because we're not kidding. All caps. You should all listen, because it's in caps. And when we finally, we're not kidding, because we've been issuing these memos, we used color. I mean, because we're not kidding anymore. Well, as I told you about blinders being ripped off, I had gone to a meeting, and they said about that memos were one-way communication. And I never even had this concept. It was a one-way communication. I issued the memos. So I made the mistake of saying to my guys, bring me all of the memos you have. My memos were so important, that it was crumpled up because they put it under their pillow when they slept so it would come through their head by like osmosis. And they were 4 times out of date, right, if they had them at all. I go to shops today, to this day, and I already know I can tell the culture. There's usually one over the kitchen that says, your mom doesn't live here. Clean up after yourself. And there's one in the men's room, which I will not repeat. It makes us feel good. It does nothing to make our companies run better. Does that make sense to everybody? We have to get out of this trap of relying on the communication that way. Don't think you have operating manuals. Now, this is not insulting. Some of you may have some policies, procedures. That is great. Anything you have in writing and anything that's actually in the culture, you're already ahead of the pack, way ahead of the pack. But the mistake I get when I ask people if they have manuals, an employee handbook is only a fraction of the manuals. So what is an employee handbook? Holidays, vacation time. Yes, when you get paid. You know, they have no sense of humor. They have no sense of humor when they don't get paid. I don't understand that. Yeah. So if you have an employer-employee manual and they're out there in the world, it's a good thing, but it's maybe 1/10 of the type of manuals you need to run your company systematically. Really, that's it. Now, it's a good CYA. And I have to say it very slowly because I'm a New Yorker. It's there to cover your anatomy. I got it. I was worried about that. The other thing is, because of the internet and because you go to different things, it's easy to pluck a manual out in different places, right? You can pull a manual from here. Oh, this is a good CSR manual. This is a good dispatch manual. This is a good tech manual. This is a good trade manual. And all of a sudden, you're pulling pieces. So would you build your car with a Ford engine, Toyota body, Hyundai seats? You can see it's just going to be a mess. And it's the same idea here with Frankenstein. Your manuals have to work together. They have to be integrated, written in the same house. That makes sense? So more do's and don'ts. Written in plain English and read out loud. So, you know, some lessons you're lucky to come in early in life. You know what I mean? I was 25 years old. We had an employer manual. It was 250 pages long. And it was written like a law book. And I go to court, and the judge looks at me, looks at the book, looks back at me, and he goes, you think the average person can read this and understand it? And then he asked, are you going through it week by week and are they signing off? To which I had to crawl out of court and lose that case. But I learned a valuable lesson. If it's not written in plain English, it's a problem. So if your manuals don't sound like you're talking to me, you're already off on a bad track. If it reads like ARTL 1-2.57, just rip it up and throw it in the trash can and start again. It should sound like my big brother and my big sister coaching me. And when you roll it out, you read it aloud. Because here's the other trick. And unfortunately, my daughter, sweet as she was, my oldest daughter, was in those teenage years. And I was talking and coaching her because I was a good dad. And while I was talking to her, Charlie, she was doing this. Can you all see that? This is what your employees do when you keep talking to them. They just don't have the guts to do it in front of you. So what do you have to do? If you're a salesperson and you're making a sales call, who should be talking, you or the person that you're trying to sell to? Loud.
Client.
Well, who are your employees?
Client. You're
exactly right, your internal client. So they have to be talking. Here's the trick that I learned. When the words fall out of your mouth, your ears listen. When you talk, I kind of hear it because I'm hearing it through my filter. Does that make sense? So it's important as the do's to make sure that they're written in plain English. Use the 80-20 rule. My manuals are about 90% done, and all these companies I've worked with for the last 18 years, we've only changed maybe 5 or 10% to fit their company a little bit better. They go wrong is when they go, well, what about this? And what about this? And the answer is, does it happen 80% of the time or 20? And that's the tough choice you have to make. Not everything goes in the manual. So when it was printed, we used to say, if it was left on a beach, would it be good or bad for you? That's how I want you to think about your manuals. So this is a little technical. I'll try to do my best. You have a 40-room apartment house, 40 apartments in an apartment house. And there's just a skinny little half-inch gas line behind a thing that has to get changed. You're supposed to drain the whole building down and then refill it up, and you'll be there all day. So what all of us do in the trade is we pull it on the fly so it's live. You can't ever write that in the manual. You can't ever write that in the manual. You hear what I'm saying? So what it says is when you run in that circumstance, call your supervisor. And what do you think your supervisor says? Pull it on the fly. So there are things that you cannot put in the manual. And that's something that you need to know. It's not a law book. How operating manuals change the company for the better. Objectively, on how they're judged is achieved. For the first time, they'll understand how they can do the job to make you happy. Because when I woke up this morning, Bella, when I came to work for you, my number one goal is to make you happy. Because that's just the kind of way we are as employees for you. You can feel that, right? Every day when they walk in. That's their number one goal, is to make you happy. Finding a better way to do things so it's not written in stone. These are living, breathing documents. So the first time we go through it, we're only looking for two things when we roll it out. I would pick up a pen and write these down. What's wrong and what do you hate? Because when we roll it out, all I want to know from you is what's wrong and what do you hate? That doesn't mean I'm going to change it, but I'm going to listen to you. Because if I ask for your input, David, and I don't take any of it, what do they already know? I don't really want your input, is what it is, right? So I have to let them get their fingerprints on it, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But I want to find a better way. So as you have weekly meetings, and you should, 1 to 2 pages of your manuals is read at every one of those meetings because that's their job. And in those meetings, after we've gone for a while, here's the three things I'm looking for, and that's in every department. Give me a better, cheaper, faster way, and then we'll discuss it. And if we all agree, we will change it to that. You follow? You get it? That's what I'm looking for. And that's what you can do once you've established. Making good on offering a career, not a job. So if I show up as a young apprentice with no skills at your shop, can I move up? Based on what? What you demonstrate, what you know. But if I have manuals, and if I have training on those manuals, can I do more and more and more and move up? So that's how you make good on offering a career. And that is what separates you from everybody else in this room and everyone you compete with about making it not just the job. So a question comes up, what makes a company great? And there's a lot of things when it comes to leadership about what makes a company great. To me, the number one thing that makes a company great is a great company culture. If you can change this to this, you win. You hear me? And by allowing them to get the rules straight, to get a little input on those rules, this is what changes it. And if you can deliver a career, not a job, because they will know how to get more and more on an objective basis, not on your opinion, then I can move up. And that's what makes companies great. Employee buy-in is what you need. And manuals, believe it or not, are what does it. So here's a quick story to this. We didn't really think ahead. We spent $150,000 and all that time building the manuals. And again, we had to sell to a New York City union shop. How hard could that be? We had a committee. The head guy comes in from the union and goes, oh, we're not putting those manuals in. And the committee said, oh, yes, we are, because it protects us. They own those manuals. They got their fingerprints in the manuals. They were sick and tired. Now, I know this doesn't happen in any company that you are operating in, but here's how most people at our company spent their day. I was trying to please Irving, my dad. I was trying to please Marty in the office. I was trying to please Richie. I was trying to please... You follow how difficult that is? They didn't know who to please. They didn't know what would make them happy. And so this really changed that. You need to get rules to play that are defined with their fingerprints on it. When I travel this great country, and I do, and even in Canada, as I go out when I was doing consulting in my right hand, there will be a cup of Starbucks if I can find it. Does anybody in this room think that Al thinks the very best cup of coffee in this world is Starbucks? Because the screaming answer is no. No, I don't think it's the best coffee in the world. But what do I know? I can find a Starbucks anywhere, and it tastes always the same. I, like all of your customers, prize consistency. So if you show up at my house, I'm going to get a level of service. You show up at my house, a level of service, no matter who you are. As a matter of fact, when we put our manuals in, we trained our guys to say the following thing when they got to the door. The good news is, doesn't matter which one of us come, we've all been trained the same. We all follow the same manuals and procedure. Whether it's me or Tom or Frank, we're all going to be doing the same kind of operation the same way, so you get served the way you deserve. That's literally what they would say to customers. Because with customers, consistency is the number two thing. Great customer experience from start to finish. Okay, so I threw start to finish in. We belonged to an organization, and they said we had to do a better job when we answered our phones. So they went, oh, it's a beautiful day at Comfort Specialist. How are you? Hope the flowers are good. And how can we help you today? Well, this will come as a surprise to most of you. New Yorkers don't have that much time and attention. What they want to know is, they call the right place. They want to know if I've interrupted your day, because it sounds that way. And are you coming to help? That's what they really want. So it went all the way down to, good morning, Comfort Specialist. This is Al speaking. How may I help you? Well, that may not sound like a big thing, but here's how our UCSRs used to say it. Good morning, Comfort Specialist. How can I help you? So it isn't necessarily what we say, right? It's how we say it. So the way I describe it to CSRs is, you are the happy hostess at a restaurant. Everything that's going to go right from here on out started with you. You've either blown this up or you made the day. And then your ability to get it over to dispatch, now even if it's they do both, and they hang up the phone, they have this magical transformation. They're this happy hostess, we love you, we can take care of you, you're going to be happy you called. As soon as they hang out, they go over to this other side as a dispatcher and go, how am I going to get this done? So that's kind of what it needs to do. They're separated, even if they're not. And obviously, as you grow, that's something you want to do. And then getting all the information out to the tech so they can run the call without being blind. And today our software helps, but it's not everything. And then the last piece of this relay is I've got to get all that information back to the office. And if you can't do that, you got a problem. Draw a triangle. Draw a triangle. Triangle. Doesn't matter where you put it, CSR, one of those legs. Dispatcher, one of the other legs. And the third one is triangle. Oh, sorry, triangle. Technician. You know, they are listening. Should have told me that. Any one of those legs break, you don't do your thing, you got a problem. Make sense? Anything you change in any one of those, you got to look at how that affects the others. I had trained Bobby. He was flipping pizzas. Now we have manuals, we have training, you hear me? We thought we did, but we didn't. Here's what happened. One of my million jobs was an install manager for part of my day. I opened the window up, and there's Bobby, who I had trained. I hand him out the sheet about what I wanted to do with heating and stuff. And I said, look, Bobby, I can't get there at 10 a.m. like I usually do. I'll be there at 2 o'clock. Look it over. Let me know if there's anything. And he goes, oh, it's fine. I got it. So I go out to my truck, get there at 2 o'clock. I walk around the basement, and I go, this! I pull Bobby out to my truck because I didn't want to have the conversation in there. And I go, this is nothing like we talked about. He said, your brother Richie showed up and said, do it this way. And in that moment, what I realized was so critical in my life was we hadn't really defined well enough how we do our work. Bobby had a miserable day. Al had a miserable day. But most importantly, the customer was set up for failure. Does that make sense to everyone? And that was the problem. But he coined the line, if you're off the hook if you can do it. Here's the thing. Richie didn't want to define anything because then he could always change his mind. So he had this great expression that none of you in this room ever use. Why are they laughing? Yeah, use your best judgment. What it really means is, can you read my mind, Lewis? Can you read what I'm thinking right now?
Right now?
Right now, can you?
Sort of, no.
Yeah. Use your best judgment. Isn't that really a sabotage? Simply an excuse for you not taking the time to write and define it. For any given task, you do 80% of the time. So we've got to get a list of tasks before we go forward. How about that picture? Anybody relate to that? Two hands, thank you. When I talk about org charts and manuals, org charts are the bingo board, and the manuals are what cover the board. If I face this way, maybe I can. Got it? Okay. Org charts, Matt. We didn't have an org chart. And in my own company, everybody jumped in. Everybody jumped in fast as you could, just a chaotic mess. And so what happened one day, I would sleep late. It was 6:35 in the morning when I would arrive. And Marty had been in the office since 6 a.m., and he would get a customer complaint. And he would walk across the hall and yell at my service manager about this problem. And by 6:35, there was my service manager on the roof, just about ready to go. And I had to walk him back. We had been raised that we race to get our suppliers paid. And it paid off because of Hurricane Sandy. They took care of us. That was my dad's wisdom. But one day I was at the dispatch desk and I get a call from a supplier and they go, oh, well, you may have missed this bill. You know, we understand you always pay, but it's not. And I go, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And I went over to the accounts payable person and I let go. Big time. So this, do you mind standing? Come up. Yeah. Marty, if you don't like what's going on in the service department, you tell me and I will get it straight. And then Marty looks at me and says, if you don't like the way the bills are getting paid, you tell me and I will get it straight. And the two of us looked at each other a second longer and go, we really need to get this down in writing, don't we? Thank you. And that was the birth of org charts. That was the birth of org charts for us. No matter what size company you are, you need three types of org charts. One is a flat organizational chart. I'm not interested in your CIO, CFO, CTO, whatever other initial you want to use. It's the boxes it takes to run your company. And the good news is the handout, Christian, that they can get, they'll have the handout. You don't need to pass it out when they get it. Grab the handout on the way out for time. Okay. A depth chart is basically, so once you get the boxes set, right, you got to figure out who's first string, second string, third string. So in football, if the center gets hurt, what should we do? Stop the game? There's somebody else cross-train, right, to snap the ball. It's the same thing we have to do for every box on our org chart. The last one is the flow of communication. Because your techs love to come to you, the service manager, and say their check is wrong. But who should they go see? Accounts payroll, payroll, right? So they don't know who to talk to about what. Why would your employee care about your org chart? Here are the four reasons. First of all, if they want to know, where am I today? You promised me a career, where am I today? Your org chart shows them where they can go and grow. Where can I go tomorrow? And here at my company, they finally wanted to know who really is my boss. Why is everybody yelling at me from the time I walk in the door? Right? I had educated my dad and my brothers and said, if you don't like the way the trucks are, you come see me. It's my job. I'll get it straight. Come see me. Don't be yelling at these guys. Because based on the org chart, it's my job. And finally, and most importantly to them is, okay, who do I go to for help? Who can I go to for help that's safe? I would go all day, except somebody said you guys want to eat lunch. Well, I'll be around. I'll be around. So one secret to getting buy-in. One secret to getting buy-in. They get their fingerprints on it. They don't get to hijack the manuals. So you have to have something in place and a mini rollout. If you have a big company, have any of you been to your house of worship or your community board and tried to get anything passed? What happens in those meetings? It's called a donut meeting, isn't it? Donut this week, next week a donut, next week a donut. That's not what you're doing. So these are rollout meetings where we stand up, we read it, we discuss it, and if we have to edit or make a change, we make a note of it. And then by next week, we come back, either change it, alter it, or say good as is. Three critical things for keeping it in the culture, because here's the hope of your employees. Just like when you come home from this meeting, your team is excited that you're coming home with all these great ideas, am I right? Because my team was excited when I got back from these things. Not. So when you come back, that's the kind of thing. But here's the thing about the three critical things. They're hoping you will get over yourself and this will go away. And if you don't read it every week in a meeting, a page or two at a time, out loud, if you don't role play, if you don't do side by sides, and if you don't let them get some fingerprints without hijacking it, guess who wins? They do. And nobody wins. And then nobody wins. Read it, meet on it. Manuals determine your weekly meeting and your agenda. And you need to keep 1 to 2 pages in the culture when you get through. Role plays is what makes it come to life. So there's role plays for techs. My house had the cleanest heating system in the world because I was always running classes until I built a training center. So if you don't have time and money to build a training center, guess what? Your home just got volunteered. You can do your friend's house. Do charity work that you can make count. Role plays for your CSRs, side-by-side for the staff, and then you have to get into the truck. Otherwise, you don't know what's going on. So getting fingerprints is important. Better, cheaper, faster. That's how the keys are to getting buy-in. Make sense? So what should your new mission be? Manuals. staff buy-in, consistent policy and procedure enforcement, and training on those systems. That, to me, is what's the most important thing that you have to do from here. Like I said, everybody needs it. Family businesses need this more because we were micromanaging each other and it was a bad way. Friction between family members become worse when it's not clear who fills which box and how to do that. When operations are undefined, family managers lack individual job descriptions. Okay, let's have the top five. Somebody out there read nice and, can I have that top five? You bring it up. Thank you. Okay. Finding the right or good people. How'd I do? How'd I do? Pretty good? What you really need are willing people that you provide the skills and training. And without the manuals, you'll always be sabotaged. You're out there looking for the ready-made package. And hear what I have to say. You don't get the piece you want. You get all of me. The good, the bad, the ugly. So stop it and make your life better. Accountable. Well, if you have it in writing and you go over it and then you demonstrate it, would you say that's a high level of accountability? Yes or no?
Yes.
Not knowing what to measure. Well, if you tell me how to wash my hands, specifically, do you know how to measure that? Can you put metrics in here? Yes? It's either good or bad. I either did your toilet reset your way, right? Lack of systems, where you build the blocks. Toxic, negative employees. They're toxic and negative in two ways usually, because you bought the whole employee versus a willing person you trained, or they're upset because they don't know how to make you happy, because they can never make you happy the way it is today. Make sense? And communication. Remember I talked about that triangle? If each of them have a manual, they know what they're supposed to be doing, so when they pass the baton, communications is not lost. How'd I do? Okay. Are you able to do this on your own? I couldn't. I spent a year just putting this task list together. Employees meetings took 6 months of having everybody sit around the table like you guys are sitting there. First draft, 6 months, took 6 years to polish it. I've been around for a while. So what do I do next? Step one is there's a handout form out there, and there's a 10% discount for Howard. You have to use Howard's link. Howard arranged for this. So at the back table, there's an order form. Come to the table. Hand in your completed form. Then watch the videos that are in this program because as exciting as I am for 75 minutes, I don't know how you all stayed seated. I am running. I had a workshop. Guys came to the workshop. They did really well learning this stuff. One of them was not doing as well as I had hoped. So I said, take the program. No charge. So he calls me up about a month later and he goes, can I say something you won't get insulted? He's a New Yorker also. So I said, well, I'm from New York, I'm not going to get insulted, but okay. He goes, I like the videos better than the class with you. I said, why? And he said, because when you talk, it's like a waterfall hitting me, like a fire hose. But I can just hit the replay button and absorb each lesson at my own speed. So I can watch it 5 times if I feel like it and really let these things do. When you're done, you can buy more to fill in your bingo board. And that's me, my friends. Thank you so much for being patient with me. By the way, look at your watch. I finished at 12 o'clock and you have lunch.